National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History Number 2. My name is Marvin Herzog. My respondent's name is Alvin Rogal. This is Monday, January the 15th, 1996. Al, we were discussing your family, and we would like to have you tell us about your grandchildren and particularly their religious training.
I have 5 grandchildren, 3 granddaughters, 2 are 12 cousins and 1 is 16, and 2 grandsons who are cousins, both for 11 years old now. None of them, now they're both from mixed marriages, none of them have had formal religious training of any kind. The only thing that I can say is that, again, their mothers, although non-Jewish, are also not, don't have a bent, strong bent toward organized religion. So that if you ask the children what's their religion, they tell you Jewish. But they've had no formal. But they do, you know, at home they follow the normal Jewish celebrations and lighting Hanukkah candles and taking school off on religious holidays and so on. So I think in their mind they know they're Jewish, but they have not had formal religious training.
What branch of Judaism did your grandparents adhere to?
My grandparents were Orthodox. They were immigrants, and they came over here as adults, and they came over with the Orthodox religion. I'm trying to remember the name of my grandfather's shul on the in the East End. It was Tippereth Israel or something.
How would you describe your adolescent years here in Pittsburgh?
I think my adolescent years were very good years, normal. I did the normal things and had the normal associations. They were happy years. My parents were good parents, very supportive. I did reasonably well in school. I never had any serious problems of any kind. And, I would have to say that they were very good. They supplied me with all the basics of being a reasonably sensitive adult. And I can't think of anything in particular. I used to play hockey on the street, played hide and seek on the street, went out on Halloween night, did all the normal things that kids do, and I remember them as very happy years.
What part of the city did you live in?
In Squirrel Hill.
Then I would have to assume that your contemporaries were Jewish for the most part.
I'd say for the most part. I had a few very good, lifelong, non-Jewish friends dated from grade school, like Chuck McCaffrey, but predominantly Jewish friends, yes.
And when your family went on vacations, can you tell us where you normally vacationed?
You mean as a child?
No. When your children were growing up.
With my children, traditionally my wife and I, with some friends from New York, used to go to St. Thomas every year for 10 days, and that was always our vacation. We spent a number of years at Fire Island in the summer, where my wife went with the children. I would just run back and forth weekends when I could manage to do it. Every spring break, since the kids were 5-6 years old, I had the theory that while I was working every day, I didn't have as much time with them as my wife did. So every spring break, I would take the two boys by myself, without my wife, on a vacation. And we did things like fishing in Florida, and scuba diving in Bermuda, and so on. But it gave me a solid 10-day period with them, head-to-head, without their mother there. And I just remember those vacations as tremendously valuable. I really bonded with them, got to know them, they got to know me, and it was a very, very productive thing to do. And I loved doing it. Those were the best vacations I ever took.
Kind of a male bonding.
They were young, you know, from 5 to maybe till the time they were 12 and discovered girls. We used to look forward to that and plan it during the year and then take the trip. And it was just great. I know it was great for them, but it was particularly great for me. But we made it a tradition that every spring the three men went on vacation.
Wonderful. Al, I'd like to discuss with you your community affiliations. We know that you're a very, very busy person in Pittsburgh, and have gained an immensely favorable reputation. Could you tell us about, for example, Montefiore Hospital or your activities with the institution?
Yeah, it's hard to trace back exactly what happened. I do remember this. When I got out of the Navy in 1946, a friend of mine, Lester Hamburg, wanted me to go to a meeting where they were forming the Young Adult Division of the United Jewish Federation. And that was my first exposure to community work. We formed a Young Adult Division, and we actually solicited young adults for a federation. And young adults were people in their 20s. A year later, I was chairman of the Young Adult Division. And from then on, my activity in federation ultimately resulted in campaign chairman and then president. And during those years, they asked me to be on the board of Montefiore. And I started out on the board. I spent 9 years on the board. And they made me a life member. And I was chairman of a number of committees and joint conference committee and the finance committee through the years. And just took an interest in the hospital and ultimately was president of the hospital. And then, fortunately or unfortunately, was very involved in the selling of the hospital to the university, out of which came the Jewish Healthcare Foundation, which I think is a tremendous asset to the Jewish community.
That's recently, isn't it?
And that was about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I became the first chairman of the Healthcare Foundation, which was endowed by the money that the university gave us for the hospital.
And other activities?
Well, there were just so many of them, really. I was always involved in something in the community. I was on the board of the Jewish Community Center. I was president of Federation, president of Montefiore, chairman of the Healthcare Foundation. And then in the last 10 or 15 years, I thought it was important the Jews become recognized and active in the non-Jewish community. So I was asked to be a trustee of Carnegie Mellon University and became very active on that board. And then I went on the Robert Morris College Board and on the Pittsburgh Ballet Board. And about 5 years ago, I was asked to be on the Pittsburgh Foundation, the Community Foundation Board, and I'm still on that. So I've been on an awful lot of boards and so on, and I can only say it's been very rewarding. And I do feel that I've tried to follow my father's advice and give back to a community that's been very, very good to me.
During those years that you were active in community work, was there any emphasis made by your contemporaries about the fact that you were the Jewish representation to these organizations?
Yes, I got that from time to time. There's one story, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but a man by the name of Carl Kirschler, who was about 80 years old, and this is when I was about 40 years old, he was president of a small bank on the north side, and he called me to have lunch. And he started to present this, he was chairman of the board of St. Francis Hospital. And he started to tell me about St. Francis and the fact that it was really a community hospital now, more than a Catholic hospital. And they wanted to expand their board and make it more representative and so on. And he kept hemming and hawing around. And I finally said, "Mr. Kirschler, are you asking me to be the Jew on the board?" And he said, well, you know. I said, no. I said, "I think that's wonderful. I think you're doing the right thing, and I'd be honored to be on the board." So I went on the board of St. Francis Hospital. This was, 25, 30 years ago. I'm still on that board. And Mr. Kirschler passed away, and Gurdon Flagg, who was then the professional who ran the Duquesne Club in Pittsburgh, became chairman of that board. He and I became friendly. And we were at a luncheon meeting at the board once, and he walked up to me and he said, "Alvin, have you ever thought of joining the Duquesne Club?" And I said, "Gurdon, from what I know about the Duquesne Club, that's the last thing I ever think of. My father couldn't even be a guest in this club." So he said, now you're being defensive, and that's not true, and there are other Jewish members." And so I said, "Who?" Well, he named a few people like Leon Falk and Cy Herwald, who was an executive vice president of Westinghouse. They all had corporate connections where you can't have all the junior executives on at the Duquesne Club and not have a senior executive. And I said, "Gurdon, and he named four people out of 2,000. So I said, "Well, Gurdon, I don't have corporate connections and so on, and I wouldn't want my name bandied around." He said, "I would like you to join the Duquesne Club." So we talked about it. He picked out who should recommend me, the five recommenders I needed. All of them were non-Jewish. And remember, he said to me, "If I want you in the Duquesne Club, you'll be in the Duquesne Club." So 6 months later, he called me. I appeared before the membership committee. And I also said to him, "Gurdon, you have to promise me if there's any flack of any kind, you've got to withdraw my name immediately. I won't subject myself to that kind of thing. I don't want to fight to get in the Duquesne Club." And he said, "I promise you that." Anyway, I got in the Duquesne Club, and I went over to see Gurdon to do the appropriate courteous thing and thank him for the way he handled it and so on. And he sits back in his chair and he says, "Alvin," he said, "I don't see why in a couple of years we can't have 15 of your people in this club." So, you know, what do? You hit him with an ashtray? So I said, "Gurdon, how about 50? And he said, "Or 50. Now, I took a lot of flack from Jewish friends for joining the Duquesne Club. My feeling was that it was time to start breaking the barrier. And what I did for about 3 years, I would talk to friends, convince them to join. I would take them over to Gurdon, introduce them, sit in his office. He would go over who they knew that could recommend them. He would handle the thing. And every one of those friends joined, and now in the Duquesne Club there must be 200-300 Jewish members. So all the guys who gave me flack are now members, but it was an interesting experience. And Gurdon, who said your people, just didn't know any better. It was just a dumb remark.
Yeah.
But the other thing I wanted to say, that my switchboard got one call saying, "Is this Alvin Rogel's office? And I just want to tell you, he has no right to be in the Duquesne Club, and I resent the fact." The switchboard operator said, "Who is this?" And he said, "Never mind who it is, just give him a message." Now, against that one call, I'll bet I had, no exaggeration, 50 calls from other members of the Duquesne Club saying, "We're delighted to learn you joined, and welcome," and so on and so on. So there again, there was one anti-Semite, but there were 50 people who said they thought it was fine.
Are you still a member?
Oh, yeah. I had lunch there today. And I've enjoyed it. And I've enjoyed getting all these other Jews in, too. Although they get in themselves now, it's really no big deal anymore.
Well, do you belong to the Concordia Club also?
Yes, sure.
All right.
What year?
The year that I joined the Duquesne Club was probably 69 or 70.
Well, then you've been...
Been over 20 years, sure.
Yeah. And you've enjoyed the affiliation.
Yeah, it's strictly a downtown businessmen's club. Sure. I don't use it socially or anything, but, you know, it's gotten to the point now where the United Jewish Federation wants a downtown meeting, and we'll have it at the Duquesne Club. And the Duquesne Club more than welcomes it. So I think the barrier is broken, and if you don't get into the Duquesne Club today, it's not because you're Jewish.
That's well put.
Yeah.
I need to tell me about your business affiliations also, Alvin. You've made quite a reputation in the insurance field.
Well, my father was a bank teller, and he sold some insurance on the side. And he ultimately formed a small one-man insurance agency. And on my way back from my honeymoon in 1946, I got word that my father had a heart attack. And in those days, they kept you in the hospital for 2 months before they let you out. And he asked me if I would go down and watch the office for him. I had studied engineering in college, and I had a job with a manufacturing plant in Blairsville, Pennsylvania, and that's where I planned to go to work. And so I went down to watch my father's office, and I never got out. So I stayed in the insurance business, and we built a very nice company called Rogal Company. And in 1972, because I had young children and I felt that if anything happened to me, the agency, because it's a service business, really would not provide for my family. So I sold the business to a public company for tradable stock, so that if I ever died, it was their problem, not my family's problem. And they had a stake. And from there, the public company went through a lot of stuff for a number of years. And in 1982, they announced that they were going to sell us. And they had acquired 12 agencies, mostly in the Southeast, including Rogal Company. And Bob Hill, who ran the Richmond agency, and I went to them and said we wanted to buy it back. So we got all the other 10 presidents together, and to make a long story short, we borrowed money from insurance companies and we bought the business back from the public company and formed Hill, Rogal & Hamilton Company, which is now a public company with where we're in 51 cities now. And that's a short version what happened, but it's been an adventure.
But you've had some personal business affiliations, haven't you? Certain industry recognition as well. Can you tell us about that?
In the insurance business?
Yes.
Well, I'm a life member of the Million Dollar Roundtable. I've been on a lot of national insurance committees and boards and so on. I've been an active player in the industry, and I'm, you know, along with a lot of other people, I'm well known in the industry. It's just normal activity. I hate to talk about it.
I'm sure that it's more than that with the recognizable successes you've had. You must have been You must have been very knowledgeable about the insurance business, for one thing. And I think that the results bear that out. I'm anxious to know about the kinds and the nature of the awards that you received from time to time, not only in the insurance industry, but otherwise.
Well, right next door in my office are a bunch of plaques, and if I can refer to those, you'll see some of them. But the Vectors Award for the Pittsburgh Vectors, the Emanuel Spector Award for the Jewish community, there are a number of them over there, and I have nice plaques which I keep on my wall, and I'm very proud of them. I got an award from the United Way 1 year, after serving on their board for 6 years. That's another board I was on when I wanted to get active in the non-Jewish community. And the awards are over there, but you know, I don't want to make a big issue out of them. They're not.
Well, you should, because
I didn't discover penicillin or anything like that.
Well, we're very proud of you, and of course, the fact that you're so modest about it is to your credit. But we will discuss that. What other organizational activities would you like to tell us about, Alvin?
Well, I've mentioned we've talked about the fact that I'm a past president, lifetime member of the board of Montefiore, that I've been a trustee of Carnegie Mellon for about 20 years, and St. Francis Hospital, Robert Morris I mentioned. I'm also a fellow of Brandeis University. The way that happened is that Dr. Sacker, who was the first chancellor of Brandeis, called me and got my name from somebody, and this again was many years ago, and said that Brandeis wanted to get identity in the Jewish communities in various major cities around the country because he felt it was the Jewish university in the country and should have the support of all Jews. And he wanted to have a dinner in Pittsburgh and try to get 300-400 people there. He would come and speak, and the purpose of the meeting was to raise money for Brandeis. And he asked me if I would be chairman, and I agreed to do it. We had this meeting. It took about 6 months of planning and begging people to come and so on, but we had about 450 people there, and Dr. Sacker, who was a very brilliant, dynamic academician, spoke to us. We raised a good deal of money for Brandeis. And about a year after that, I was called by the president of the Brandeis board asking me to be a fellow of Brandeis. Now, being a fellow is not being on the board of Brandeis, it's just an honorary designation because of service done to Brandeis. But the whole experience was very enjoyable because the association that I developed with Dr. Sacker. For many, many years, I've been a director of the Pittsburgh Press Old Newsboys Fund for Children's Hospital. And what that is every year a bunch of people go out and try to raise money for Children's Hospital through the auspices of the Pittsburgh Press, or the old Pittsburgh Press. Now the Post-Gazette has taken it over. And what we developed, what really started with my Uncle Max, 40 or 50 years ago, he used to sell newspapers one day a week on the corner. And he used to make everybody pay him a dollar for the newspaper, and the money went to Children's Hospital. And that's how this old Newsboys thing started. But it evolved into more sophisticated fundraising, and what we did was develop a list of maybe 2,000 names, all Pittsburghers, but as the years went on, they spread all over the country, and we followed them, and every year we mail these letters saying it's time to kick in for Children's Hospital, and we get anything from $10 to $1,000. People living in Florida now still send us the money, and we were always in the top 10 Old Newsboys in the fundraiser. A couple of years we were second and third. And I think over the years we've raised maybe $300,000-$400,000 for Children's Hospital, but it's been a very enjoyable activity. I mentioned the Jewish Community Center, the Federation, which I'm a past president and campaign chairman. The Jewish Healthcare Foundation, I think, is one of my proudest accomplishments in the community, in that when Montefiore was sold to Presby Hospital, and the reason it was sold is that Montefiore could really no longer compete in that milieu financially. It would have taken tremendous support from the Jewish community and enormous fundraising efforts, which I don't think we could have accomplished. It would have been in the neighborhood of $40 or $50 million to bring the hospital up to the cutting edge medically to be able to compete with Presby. At any rate, we were able to arrange a deal with Presby where they would take over Montefiore and they would endow a $75 million, what they called Montefiore Healthcare Foundation. And I was asked by a group of community leaders to be the first chairman. The atmosphere at the time was a lot of hostility in the community because we sold Montefiore. But that was actually about 1990. But we knew, those of us in the leadership of Montefiore knew that 5 years later, we would not be able to compete with Presby and probably would go out of business. At least Presby, who was in the throes of building a 500-bed addition, if they built that, they wouldn't need Montefiore. And what we did was go in then, they took over Montefiore and didn't build their addition. It was a prime time to do it. And they endowed this healthcare foundation, and I was the first chairman. Took an awful lot of criticism from people about you sold Montefiore from under us and that sort of thing. And it was a difficult thing to get the community coalesced in support of this foundation. It was also the first time the Jewish community had an organization that was going to give away money rather than ask for money. So the demands on where that money went were very varied and so on. And I spent 3 years building staff in that foundation and building community confidence in it. And now, 5 years later, the Jewish Healthcare Foundation is well accepted in the Jewish community. It's a real player in the general community in the foundation field. It's gotten a lot of awards and has accomplished a lot and has been. I've had calls from Cincinnati and Denver from their hospital people who were in the throes of being forced to merge and sell their hospitals, who wanted to follow our format in endowing a foundation for the benefit of the general community and the Jewish community. That was a mammoth job, and I'd say it consumed 40% of my time for 3 years, but I'm very proud of the Healthcare Foundation. And just recently, I got a call from a lovely young lady asking me to go on the board of Winchester Thurston School. And my granddaughters all went to Winchester. One of them attends it now. I like the school. I had sworn not to accept any other board commitments. I'm 73 now. It's time to sort of slow down. But she was very charming, and she conned me into it, so I did accept a position on the Winchester board, and I'm just new to that board. But I am in the throes of trying to cut activity a little bit. I still am active in the Pittsburgh Foundation. I'm active at Carnegie Mellon. I'm modestly active in Robert Morris and St. Francis. I still do the Pittsburgh Press Old Newsboys campaign every year. And United Jewish Federation knows that they can call on me on an ad hoc basis if they ever want me to sit on a particular committee and so on. But I am at this point trying to cut down a little bit, at least not take on any more. I love to ski, and I'm trying to spend more of my time skiing.
I must say, Mr. Alvin Rugal, that you have adhered to the tenets of both your father, Hyman, and your uncle, Max, insofar as spending your time giving back to the community. How in the world you ever had the time, let alone the energy, to do all of the great things that you've done? I think that your father and your uncle Max can be very proud of you, as we all are. So thank you very, very much for this wonderful presentation. We loved it, and I think we love you too.
Legible on the tape.
And so on behalf of